The Eddie B. Sit edition and audio series of the Talmud Bavli.
Masechet Sota has been dedicated by our good friends and Talmid, Mr. Haimi and Dina Dana, Hashem Yishmonem V'Chayim, for the success of their children, and especially the Fu'as Shelema, Moshe Ben Dina, ולעילוי נשמת יוסף בן סרינה, דוד בן פרידה, נעיר בן זוהרה, משה בן פייגה רות, שרה בת אסתר, פייגה רות בת אסתר, אל אסתר בת יוכבת. רוח השם תניחם בגן עדן, אמן. תזכו למצוות. דף למדל, תראי זף is being studied, לעילוי נשמת מרת זקנתי, יפה בצרה. ולעילו נשמת מור זקני יוסף בן שרה ואברהם בן אסתר ושלמה בן רבקה רוח השם תניחם בגן עדן אמן this life is being studied רפואה שלמה משה בן דינה שרה רוחמה בת רחל ושרה בת רחל ומשה בן רחל אינה רפנה להם רפואת הנפש ורפואת הגוף רפואתם קרבה לבוא וכן ירסום ונאמר אמן וגן תראה this life על למדים על עמוד בית And we start 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 lines from the bottom, starting from the Braita. Tanu Rabbanan, Ketzad Avru Yisrael et Yerden. How did the Jewish people cross the Jordan at the time of Yehoshua? Bechol Yom, every single day, Aron Noseya Ahar Shene Degalim. Normally, the Aron would travel. And in front of the Aron, literally there were two flags, and behind the Aron there were two flags. Each flag represented three Shevatim. So basically you had six Shevatim in front of the Aron, six Shevatim behind the Aron, and the Aron in the middle. That's the normal way that it camped. That's the way it's written in Sefer Bamidbar. For example, you had Yehuda, Reuven, Ephraim, and Dan. That was considered one degel. They were traveling in the front. So on and so forth. However, on the day that the Jewish people crossed the Midbar, crossed the Yarden, the Gemara says, V'hayom nasa tehila. On that day, the Aron actually was in front. It led the camp. Shne'emar, Hine Aron Berit Adon Kol Haaretz Over Lifnechem. As the Pasuk says, the Aron was Over Lifnechem, traveled in front. Right, as she says, Lifnechem, Mashma Lifne Kullechem. It's Mashma in front of all of them. Bechol Yom Vayom, Leviim Nosim Et Aron. Generally speaking, who was in charge of carrying the Aron? That was a service of the Leviim. Benekehat, right? Like it says in the pasuk, "Umishmartam ha'aron v'ashulcham." That was their position. V'hayom nasu kohanim. But on that day, when they crossed the Jordan, the kohanim actually carried the aron. Shene emar v'haya kenoah kapot regle kohanim nosei aron Hashem. Says when the aron, the kohanim, stuck their feet in the waters of the Yarden. So it says the ones that were holding the aron. So that was again a special day. Tanya, Rabbi Yosef Omer, b'shlosha mekomot nasu kohanim et aron. There's actually three situations in history where the kohanim carried the aron. Kesha'avru et hayarden, which we just mentioned, u'kshesibu et yericho. Every single day, the Jewish people, they made a hakafa around the city of Yericho. They walked around the city, and on Shabbat, they walked around the city seven times. Okay, and with that, they also had the Aron with them. The Aron was leading the circle, and who carried it at that time? The Kohanim. And lastly, ukshehaziruhu limkomo, when they returned the Aron to its place, the Kohanim carried it. Now, what does that mean? Look at Rashi, bottom Rashi on the Amud, ukshehaziruhu limkomo, bimesh Shelomo. In the times of Shlomo HaMelech, Lebet Kodesh HaKodeshim. That's actually its place. Tichtiv, Vayavou. Kol zeknei Yisrael, so all the elders of the Jewish people came by Yisrael Kohanim et Aaron. Ve'ainu haziru demkomo. Shekishehigla bimei Eli. At the time of Eli HaKohen, the Aaron was taken into captivity by the Pilishtim. Mitoch bet kodesh kodashim shel mishkan she'asa Moshe, misham nutal, was taken from there. Shamishkan nikba b'shilo. Initially the mishkan was made by Moshe Rabbeinu. And they came into Eretz Yisrael, so they established it in Shiloh. U'shehazilu Pilishtim lo haya lo makom kavua. And when they returned it to Pilishtim, when they got it back, they didn't have a place to put it. So where did they put it? Shareh Harev Mishkan Shiloh, because Mishkan Shiloh was already destroyed. So where did they put it back when they got it? V'nishta bebet Avinadav. They left it in the fellow's house called Avinadav. U'misham v'yod David l'suf 20 shana levet oved Edom. They brought to another fellow called Oved Edom after 20 years. U'misham ne'ir David ad shebana Shlomo et bet ha-Mikdash. Ubana lo ad David, and he built the office for the Aron. Lifnim min ha'echal ve'amat teraksin chotzetzet b'mkom ha'parochet v'ukarui mekomo. That's considered the place. That is the permanent place of the Aron. Kedichtiv v'yavi'u ha'kohanim et Aron b'rit Hashem el mekomo el David abayit. So the Aron had a nice exile for a while until it got back to its original place where it's supposed to be, which is actually the Bet HaMikdash. So the Aaron was carried three times by the Kohanim. So comes the Gemara and says, Vechevan shenitbelu ragle Kohanim b'mayim. Once the Kohanim, they stuck their feet in the Jordan, right? They just put their legs in the water. Hazru amayim la'achorehim. So the water started to reverse. The waters of the Jordan flowed downstream. The miracle was, once they stuck their feet in the water, so instead of continuing to flow downstream, they went backwards. And the Gemara is going to say that the water started to pile up on each other until it became a very, very tall, a pillar of water. Shine emar, uchbo nos'eh ha'aron ad ha'yerden ve'gumer v'yamdu amay me'yordim me'lema'ala. So it says the waters that were coming downward, kamu ned ehad, right? They formed one pillar, okay? Vekama govhan shel mayim, and how tall was the water? So the Gemara says, shenem asar mil al shenem asar mil. It was actually 12 mil high. Rashi says, yud bet mil keneged mahane Yisrael. That was actually the length of Klal Yisrael when they would travel. The Jewish people in their formation was Yud Bet Mil in width and Yud Bet Mil in length. So basically what the Gemara is saying over here is, according to the Girsa of Rashi at least, that it took Yud Bet Mil length of Jews to cross the Jordan River, and in that time that Yud Bet Mil people walked across, Yud Bet Mil of water piled high. So as she explains that, as she says, if you look at the fourth line, Yud Bet Mil Kenegad Mahane Yisrael, if you notice, that she does not tell us Yud Bet Mil al Yud Bet Mil. He doesn't tell us that the width of the waters of the Jordan were Yud Bet, just the height was Yud Bet Mil. So he has a different text in our Gemara. He says, Shayu Shnem Asar Mil, Ashnem Asar Mil, which is the Jewish people. That was their distance, their length. Vem Avru Kahane Yatam. Rohab Mahanem Avru Yahad Kemot Shu Rohab Shnem Asar Mil. Nimsa Shelo Shau Beovran Ela Malach Shnem Asar Mil Shel Orech Mahanem. The length that it took the Jewish people to travel across was they traveled in their width, right? Which is 12 mil. There was a lot of people walking across at the same time, but till the last guy got across, it was 12 mil. So that she says that ad sha'alu aharonim shel sofa mahane, until it took the last guy to cross. So ukenegdan gavu hamayim, gavu hamayim. So keneged the amount of people, 12 mil keneged 12 mil, which according to this Gemara it assumes that human beings are able to walk at the same distance as water is able to fall. So it's giving the same ratio. 12 mil, can I get 12 mil? So to that, the Gemara comes along and says, "Rabbi Yehuda, Amar lo Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, the Dvarecha, Adam Kal or Mayim Kalim." According to what you're saying, who's more swift, human beings or water? Havi Omer Mayim Kalim. Obviously, waters are able to flow down quicker than water. So he doesn't accept that just because there was 12 meal of people that it arose 12 meal of water. He says, according to your logic, he's by the time 12 meal, if you say that's all it went high, and then it came crashing down, there still should have been Jews in the water. It would have drowned them. Ela melamed shayu mayim nigdashim ve'odim kipin al gabe kipin yoter mishlosh me'ot mil. He says it was much higher because the waters go down much quicker, and therefore they were just piling on top of each other, water on water, until it reached like 300 mil, which is hundreds of miles in the sky. Ad shra'u otan kol melchei mizrach u'ma'arav. Until all the kings of the east and the west, they were able to see this tower of water that was just piling up. Shne'emar, as the pasuk says, "Vayi cheshmoa kol malchia emori asher be'ever yerden yama bechol malchia kenani asher alayam et asher uvish Hashem et me yerden mepene bnei Yisrael ad ovram vayi mas lebabam." Their heart melted when they saw this. Ve'lo aya b'em od ruach mepene b'nei Yisrael. They had no more spirit, and strength to go fight the Klai Yisrael. Now the Gemara says they saw it, but the pasuk that they bring says that they heard it. Ve'yishma. Yeah. So make up your mind, did they see it or they heard it? So the Maharsha explains, they actually saw it, but they also heard that this miracle happened because of Klai Yisrael. They didn't know what they were seeing. They just saw waters piling up over there. So because they were able to see it, so when they heard that it was happening to Klai Yisrael, they believed it. So therefore it was a combination of their hearing that it was for the Jewish people, and they saw the actual words, so therefore it was believable that this thing was indeed happening, and therefore they were actually scared, as it says, their heart melted.
I always thought it was the first sea split.
Ve'af Rahava Zona Amra L'Shiluhei Yoshua. And as a matter of fact, when the spies went into Eretz Yisrael, the spies of Yeshua, so they got to the house of the Rahava Zona, and she was telling them about the attitude of the inhabitants of Canaan, how scared they were of Bnei Yisrael. So she says something similar. She says, "Ki shamanu et asher uvish Hashem et mei yamsuf." Says they heard already 40 years ago. They still remember how God split the sea when the Jewish people came out of Mitzrayim. Uchtiv, v'nishma, v'yimas lebabenu, v'lo kama od. Right? There was no more, they had no more strength or spirit to rise against Klai Yisrael. Now the Gemara is trying to bring a proof over here that what? That they, just like in the Yarden, they saw the waters because they were so high. So seemingly they want to bring a proof. Similarly, the Gemara's language is, now, what's the ayah from the Rahava Zona? You have to bring me a proof that they actually saw Kiryat Yamsuf. So the Maharsha explains again that even though the pasuk says they heard it, it says they heard that what, that this happened, the miracle for Klai Yisrael, but it says in the Midrash they actually saw it. How did they see it? Because there's all the waters in the world at that time when the sea split in Mitzrayim, all the waters in the world split as well. Right. And therefore they saw it with their own eyes. Therefore when they heard that this happened to Klai Yisrael, they believed it, just like we learned by the Yarden, right? That they saw it and they heard, and therefore it complemented each other. So the same thing when they heard it, that what happened to Klai Yisrael, they confirmed it because they saw the sea split in their own areas. So therefore, it was believable. Odam b'Yarden. Now the Gemara tells us what happened when the Jewish people were standing in the Jordan. So you have to picture the scene. You have all the Jewish people now in the Jordan River, and the waters are piling up over their heads. So it says, Amar lahem Yoshua. So Yoshua ben Nun tells the Jewish people, "De'u, al ma atem ovrim mit Yarden." Know what the condition over here is that we're crossing the Jordan. Al menat shetorishu et yoshvei ha'ares bepenechem. The goal is we got to go fight. We have to go inherit the land and chase out all the dwellers of Eretz Kanaan. Shne'emar vorashtem et kol yoshvei ha'ares bepenechem. V'imatem osim ken mutav. Good. If you're up to the challenge to go fight, it's very good. V'im lav, ba'in ma'in v'shutfin otechem. The waters are going to come crashing down and are going to drown otechem. Now it should say etchem. What is otechem? My otechem, oti ve'etchem. Both of us. It's going to drown you and drown Yeshua as well. The Mefarshim explained, because that's based on the rule of Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh LaZeh. Right? Everybody's responsible for each other. And therefore, if the Jewish people do not make good on their promise to fight in Israel, so Yeshua is a guarantee as well. Therefore, he says, I'm going to go down with you. Or Dan Beyerden, as they were still in the Jordan, Amar Den Yeshua, Harimu Lachem Ish Even Ahat Al Shechmo Lemispar Shifte Israel. He told each tribe to lift a rock out of the Jordan River, which means 12 stones. Uchtiv Lema Antiye Zot Ot Bekirbechem. So this will be a sign in your midst. Ki yishalun b'nechem machal lemor. Your children are going to ask, ma avanim ha'ele lachem. Say, what are these stones over there? They made like a monument of stones. The children are going to say, what does this represent? Siman banim sha'avru avot teyardin. This was the first set of stones that they collected. There's actually two set of stones they collected. This is the first set that was used to put on the side of the east side of the Jordan. They put a big monument over there that they erected in order that the people will know that there was a miracle that took place, that when the Jewish people got to the Jordan River, it split, and they were able to walk across. Okay, so it was more of a memorial. Look at the look at Rashi. Harimu lachem hem ha'avanim shekimu tachat matzav ragnei ha'kohanim. They put those rocks under the kohanim. They were on the east side. Lezikaron liyot siman lebanim she'avru avod teyarin. So it'll be a sign for the sons that their fathers crossed the Yarden. Okay, then it says odam b'Yarden amar lem Yeshua. They were still in the Jordan. Yeshua ben Nun tells them, "Se'u lachem mizim etoch yardim b'matzav ragnei ha'kohanim, hachen shtem esrei avanim." A second set. Take 12 rocks, stones, v'avartem otam emmechem. And these stones over here, you're going to take with you across to Eretz Yisrael. V'nachtam otam b'malon asher talinu bo alayla. And you're going to put them, you're going to erect them in your dwelling that you're going to sleep tonight, which means, remember, as we learned already, those were the stones that they took into Eretz Yisrael, and they eventually built the Mizbeach from those stones. And they built the Mizbeach, and they brought Korbanot. And then they took the stones, and they wrote on those stones the Torah in 70 languages. And they went to Har Gerizim and Har Eival, and they had the curses, and they had the blessings. And they continued to travel. On the first night they got into Eretz Yisrael, they reached a place called Gilgal. That was the Malon, that was their first station stop, and that's where they placed the stones as a monument. That says that you're going to place the stones in the Malon. So the Gemara says, Yachol bechol Malon u'Malon. Does it mean every station stop, every place that they dwell, which you're going to have to carry with them to every Malon, every dwelling that they're going to be? Tamud Omar asher talinu bo halayla. No, the Malon that you're going to sleep tonight, which was Gilgal, and that's where the stones remained. Now the Gemara is going to tell us exactly how big these stones were. They were actually very, very humongous, very heavy. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Abba Halafta v'Rabbi Eliezer ben Matya v'Hananya ben Hachinai amdu al otan avanim. They were there. They stood on those stones. V'shi'arum kol achat v'achat shekula karba'im se'ah. They actually weighed the measurement of 40 se'ah. That's the 40 se'ah is a volume, is a weight measure. But if you took the volume to fit 40 se'ah of water, the Gemara says in another place in Erubin, it's amma al amma al rum shalosh amot. That's like 2 feet by 2 feet. And the depth of about 6 feet. So that was the big stone, all rock, which was obviously very heavy.
Each one.
Okay, each stone, each one of the 12 stones. Okay? Now it's a question if it's really referring to the weight. Now if it's the weight, it's much heavier. If it's the weight of 40 se'ah of water, that's water is very heavy, it's probably 40 se'ah of it. So it's a machloket if it's talking to the volume of how much, 40 seconds fit into, or is it talking about the mishkal? It's talking about the mishkal, as I told you, it must be very heavier that they were able to carry it. So it comes to Gemara and says, trying to show you the strength of that generation. Each one carried one rock. right? Each leader of the tribe. So the Gemara comes up with a vigimidi, and we have a tradition. The teuna, a load, the medle inish lechetfe, that a person puts on his shoulder, right? He carries on his shoulder, right? Lifts it up. Tilta is a third the teuna have, that if somebody will put it on his shoulder and help him, which means when a person can lift himself, is a third of if somebody would put the item on the shoulder, he can carry three times the weight. If he doesn't have to lift it up, if somebody lifts it and puts it on the shoulder, which means if these stones over here were 40 se'ah, that means that they were able to lift 40 se'ah. That means if they were being helped, they were able to carry 120 se'ah. Because that's three times the amount. It's harder to lift it up yourself, to put it on your shoulder, things like that. Now you can do one third of the amount if somebody would help you lift it up. So it shows you again the strength over here of these people over here. Actually, let's go before that. Let's start from Shadam atzmo magbiya al ketefo. Right, the guy himself puts it on his shoulders. Ve'en aher misayyo, without any help from anybody else. Tilta de teunehu. Enu ela shlish masui shenosek keshematrino aher. It's only a third of the weight that he can carry. Somebody else is going to help him and lift, put it on him. Himself shayakol ahad min nosem masa kuf kaf se'in. Right, each guy technically was able to carry 120 se'in. Right, which means if they would put it on their shoulders, they can actually carry 120 seam, which is a tremendous, tremendous amount. The only rocks was only 40 because they had to lift up themselves. They didn't get any help. But if they would have got help, they were able to actually carry three times. So now the Gemara says, once already you know that, we can go start calculating another heavy item. What's that? So the Gemara says, Umikan atam mechashev le'eshkol. When the spies went into Eretz Yisrael in the times of Moshe Rabbeinu, it says they brought back a cluster of grapes. And the Gemara is going to prove over here that it took eight of the spies to carry the cluster of grapes, because it was that heavy. So the Gemara says, Shnei Emar, Vayisa'uhu Bamot Bishnayim, that they carried the cluster of grapes, Bamot, with a pole, Bishnayim, with two people. Now that's obvious. If it's a pole, so you have two people, one guy on one side of the pole, one guy on the other side of the pole. So why does the pasuk have to say bamot bishnayim? It's redundant. Mimash mashen emar bamot. If you tell me it was a pole that they carried it with, any yodeh she bishnayim? Don't I know there's two people? Matamud omar bishnayim. What does it teach bishnayim? Bishne motot. It was actually two poles. Oh, and then the Gemara comes along and says from logic, Amar biyitzak turtane. Which means it wasn't only one level, one load, but it was a load under a load, which means there was actually four poles over here. According to the way he's understanding it, Rashi, and then we'll read it inside, that when the Pasuk says Motot Shenayim, right, the language of Vayisu, Bamot Bishnayim, so it means there were two Motot. And then Rabbi Yitzhak comes up and says, no, it was two motot per level. There was turtane and turtane de turtane. Level one of the carrying and level two. So that she learns, if you just want to see it in the picture, so it'll be much easier, that there were two poles that were parallel to each other, you know, running across the cluster of grapes on one level. And then you had two other poles that were running diagonal, like forming an X across the grape itself, that we had four other people carry. So altogether, you had eight people carrying the cluster of grapes. Now, how does the Yitzhak know that? Because we have a tradition that one of them was carrying a te'ena, one te'ena, one fig. It took one person to carry a fig, it was so heavy. And one was carrying a rimun. And we know Yehoshua and Caleb didn't carry anything, because they didn't want to get involved and bring it back these gigantic fruits, because they knew they were going to use it to speak bad about the land. So that means you have eight people left. So what did the eight people do? Must be the eight people were carrying one cluster of grapes. That's why the Yitzhak from logic said, it must be turtane, turtane, de turtane. It must be two levels of poles over there. That means you had four poles, two running parallel across the cluster of grapes, and then one running diagonal across on a different level. and the other running diagonally across the other level, like forming an X, like you see in the picture over here. So altogether, you had eight people carrying this cluster of yid. You can imagine how heavy it was, because we just said that when people are carrying things together, they're able to carry three times the normal amount. And if a person could normally carry at least 40 se'ah himself, so with help, you can imagine that 120 se'ah with eight people carrying was a phenomenally heavy cluster of grapes in this situation. Now let's read the Rashi over here. Amar b'Yitzhak. Turtane v'turtane v'turtane. What does the word turtane mean? Rashi says, masui u'masui tahat masui. It was a load, and it was a load under a load. There were two levels of carrying. The poles ran through two levels of the cluster. Shatachtonim misayin et alyonim. Right, the bottom level was helping the upper level. Ubchol yachad yushne motot. On each level, there were two poles. Ketzad shne motot olchin ze etzil ze. Those were the two poles that were parallel to each other. V'arba'a nos'in otan. Right, they had four people carrying those poles. Ushne motot acharim v'arba'a b'nei adam nos'in otan v'im ba'alachson. And they traveled on a slant, mitachat shenayim alim, under the first level of poles. Mot echad derosh echad, mot echad derosh sheni, which means one pole was at the head of one of the cluster, and the other pole was at the head of the cluster, running across, crisscrossing each other, like we said. Ve'olchin ba'alachson. Rabbi Yitzhak, la mikra shami aleh. Now Rabbi Yitzhak, he didn't know that there was eight people carrying the grapes. The pasuk doesn't say there were eight people, but he knows it from logic. Ela depshita le derimon v'teena sagi b'shnayim, which means the rimon and the teena, two people carried that. One carried the rimon, one carried the teena. VeYoshua v'Kalev don asu klum. So therefore, how many spies you have left? You have eight spies. Pashlu temanya le'eshkol. ואם לאו מדרש הראשון המלמדנו דלאו מות אחד כאמר קרא לא היינו יודעים לכוון שמונה בני אדם למסוי. Which means once already we have the first דרשן that says ויסאו במות בשניים, that it was two מותות. Also then already the Yitzhak said, why don't you tell me there was two מותות? Now we'll have to tell you what there were two levels. Two motor on two levels, and therefore that's how he was able to come to Tate. So the first that Hashem is needed. The first time there wasn't one pole with two people, that's obvious. I don't need to tell me Mot Mishnaim. Every Mot has two people carrying it. There must be Mot Mishnaim, it was two poles. So all he came in and it was, I'm just telling you, two poles on two levels. Mm-hmm. And therefore you end up having eight. So it's from a Derasha as well as a Sevara. Comes the Gemara and says, Ha ketzad, the Gemara speaks it out clearly on the second white line. Shemona nasu eshkol ehad. I'm sorry. Shemona nasu eshkol ehad nasa rimon vehad nasa teena. One carried a pomegranate, one carried a fig. Yoshua vekalev lo nasu klum. Now, why did they carry anything? So the Gemara gives two reasons. Because they were the most hashuv of the spies, so therefore it was not dignified for them to carry these grapes over here, whatever it was, to carry anything. They were not part of the scheme of the spies, as she says. They were bringing it back to show that the grapes are unusually large. Right, their intention was sinister. There's giants over here. Look at the food that they eat. Yeshua and Kaddish, well, I have nothing to do with this. We're not carrying any of these fruits over here in order to use it to speak bad about the land. Peligi ba Rabbi Amiv Rabbi Yitzhak Nafha. Had Amar. One rabbi says, the Devrei Rabbi Yehuda. We're going back to what we learned earlier. We learned earlier that that according to Rabbi Yehuda, the waters actually reached a pinnacle of 12 mil high. Okay, as the Jewish people cross by. So Rabbi Yehuda, kahanayatan avru, which means they traveled kahanayatan, which means the Jewish people are 12 by 12 mil. So they traveled in their formation, which means 12 mil width, right? So they traveled in a formation as such where they all went simultaneously across the Jordan River, and by the last guy, that was the 12 mil, there was 12 mil of water that piled on top. However, the Devrer be El Azar be Rabbi Shimon, that says it actually piled up to 300 mil. So he says, Beze Achar Ze Avru, that 300 mil is so much, must be they traveled across the Jordan in single file. Because if they were to travel in 12-meal formation, it wouldn't have got to 300 mil, the water. So he says, must be they traveled one at a time, single file, according, which takes, obviously takes much longer to give the water a chance to pile on high. Mm-hmm. So it comes again, that's one way of understanding the machloket. The Hadamar, and one says no. Ben mor uben mor kehaniyatan avru. Some say no. They traveled in formation. It was 12 mil. Mor savar adam kal. But Rabbi Yehuda says that human beings are more swift than the water. That's why we only piled up to 12 mil. Umor sabar mayim kalim. And Rabbi Elazar holds that water is more swift, and therefore it's able to, obviously more water is going to pile than they were able to travel. Now the Tosafot speaks out of it. What does that mean? Adam kal. Look at the Tosafot away on the bottom. Umor sabar adam kal. Dereidachi perusho. Afal pisha davar yedua shemayim kalim. Even though we know that generally speaking water flows faster than a human being could walk, it's only when they're flowing downstream. Here it wasn't flowing downstream. Here it was traveling upstream. Which means, what happened to the Jordan? The Jordan normally flows down, right? What was happening here now, the water went back. Like it says in the Pasuk, it went back. And what was happening? It was climbing. Because now it had to climb to the top. To create a formation of like a tower. And therefore, in that case, human beings have the same pace, or can have even a faster pace than the water. Jeez, everybody agrees, normally, if you have water going downstream and a human being walking, the water is going to beat the man. But Sheikhan, in this case, the only reason Rabbi Yehuda says that Adam Kal is because this wasn't flowing downstream, this was actually flowing upstream. Because that, climbed up to the top. So in that case over there, he says, by the time 12 mil of Jewish people who traveled in a formation went across, it already piled up to the 12 mil. That's the two ways of learning. Now the Gemara goes to an analysis of the spies that Yehoshua ben Nun sent. Shelach lecha anashim. The Pasuk says, right, God says to Yehoshua, send for yourself spies. Amar Eshtakish, Shelach lecha medahtecha. Lecha, send them for your purposes. V'chi adam ze borer chelek ra' le'atzmo. Does a human being choose a bad portion for himself? Which means the Gemara is trying to give him mashal over here. Which is just like a human being. When he goes to buy something, right? He's not going to take something that's bad for himself. Kol Shekin, God, when he chooses something for the Jewish people, he's not going to choose something that's bad. God is saying, you don't have to send it back. I told you the land is good. You don't need to spy that. Does a person choose something that is inferior? As she says, Klum Yesh Adam, Kilomar. Im HaKadosh Baruch Hu Tziva. On the contrary, would God now put a stumbling block in front of the Jewish people where he would tell them, send spies knowingly that they're going to come back with a bad report? That's what it says. The Pasuk says that when they came to Moshe Rabbeinu to send the spies, so it says that it was good in my eyes. So the Gemara's Doresh, in my eyes, but not in the eyes of God. Mm-hmm. Now obviously, this needs to be understood over here. What does it mean? Moshe Rabbeinu did something that was not good in the eyes of God. God didn't want him to send it, so why did Moshe Rabbeinu send? So the rabbis explain over here an interesting understanding over here. To a fellow that is selling a product. Examples, he's selling a car, let's say. So he's selling the car, so the guy comes to him and says, hey, listen, before I buy the car, I want to check out the car to see if it's working correctly. Mm-hmm. So the guy comes along and says, of course, absolutely, check the car, do whatever you want, my pleasure. When the buyer hears that the guy's so confident, he says, you know what, I don't have to check it. If he's so confident, says it's good like that, he's not even scared, so he'll buy it. So the same thing, when the Jewish people came along and said, hey, we want to check it out. So Moshe Rabbeinu, He didn't intend to send them. His intention was, of course, go. Meaning he was trying to, it was like a bluff. Mm-hmm. Go, of course, go look at it. It's great. It's unbelievable. So he figured when the people are going to hear that Moshe Rabbeinu was so confident that you can go check out. The people will say, Moshe Rabbeinu is so confident, we don't even have to check out. But then they came along and said, no, we're going. Oh, they're going. So now we're ready to plan the plan. That's the way that she wants to express. But Moshe Rabbeinu didn't intend to send the spies, because God really didn't intend to send the spies. You want to send it, it's on your own understanding. Okay? That's what it says. It says, Vayitav be'enaya davar. Which means the item, the discussion was good in my eyes, but not the actual sending. The sending wasn't good in Moshe Rabbeinu's eyes as well. He never intended really to send them as they went, according to this interpretation. In any event, what happened, the Pasuk says, V'yahperu lanu et ha'aretz. Now normally, yahperu means lahpor is to dig. A spy that usually is like a digger. What is a digger? An excavation. He digs and he tries to discover things. So go dig out the land. Go find out what's going on over here. Amar Rabbi Chiya bar Abba Meragelim lo nitkavenu ela lebushta shel Eretz Yisrael. Their intent from the beginning was to bring out the shame of Eretz Yisrael. Kiti v'acha v'yachperu lanu etara. See, the Torah uses a strange word, v'yachperu. Normally it should say v'yiragelu. That's a normal word for spy. But over here it says v'yachperu from the word, what? Uchtivatam. It says in the Pasuk, this Pasuk over here actually is in Yeshaya, v'hafra levana uvusha hachama. She's over here, it's saying that the sun and the moon are going to be embarrassed and humiliated. The hafra is to be humiliated. So you see what? V'yachperu means to humiliate. And this is what HaKadosh explains, that the spies had a bad intent in their heart, because they thought that they're going to lose their position of leadership if they go into Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, to them, even though maybe on a conscious level they weren't thinking about that, but subconsciously that was in the deep recess of their heart, that they wanted to retain onto the power, so therefore they saw the things in a bad light. Ve'ele shemotam. And the Torah lists the names of the spies. Le'mater Reuven Shemua ben Zakur. Amar b'Yitzhak Davar Zeh Masoret b'Yadenu Me'avotenu. We have a tradition. Meragelim al shem ma'asehem nikre'u. All the names of the spies, their names actually indicate that they were faulty, that they had bad intentions. So we only figured out one name, how his name represents what he did. Setur ben Michael. Setur, what does Setur mean? She satar ma'asav shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Satar is to destroy, or is to dismantle. He dismantled the actions of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which means God said the land is good, and he came along and setur, he dismantled, he demolished it. He came along and went against the will of God by saying that the land is is actually not good. And what? Michael, setur ben Michael, she'asa atzmo mach. He made Chas v'Shalom HaKadosh Baruch Hu weak. If you remember when the spies came back, one of the things they said was, is that even God is not strong enough to remove his subjects from the land. So which means they made Chas v'Shalom God himself as if he was unable and not capable to, to oust the Goyim from there. Amar Rabbi Yohanan, Af Anu Nomar. But we have another name that we can doresh on. Nahbi ben Vofsi. What's the derasha? Nahbi Shehbi Devarav Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Nahbi is to hide. He concealed the words of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that she says, Velo Amaran Kemochen. Which is, he didn't say them like they were. God said the land is good. He came along and concealed them, and he said, other things about the land. Vofsi Shepiseya Al Midotav Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He skipped over the midot of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the Maharshak, so he skipped over the midot. The midah of God is that God rewards the good people and punishes the bad people. And therefore, since the inhabitants of Eretz Canaan were bad people, so therefore it says that they deserved punishment. And the Jewish people earned through the Zechuyot to go into Eretz Yisrael. He skipped over that midah and said, no, the Jewish people don't deserve to go in, and the Canaanim are not going to be ousted. That's going against one of the principles of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that he's ma'anish l'rasha'im, and he's mezaket, and it's tzaddikim. So he skipped over the midot. Nahmi ben Vofsi, Shepiseya. Vofsi is like Kamdashon Lefsoa. He skipped over one of the midot of the Baruch Hu. Ve'yadu ba'negev. So it says they went into the Negev area. Ve'yavo ad Hevron. And he came to Hevron. Now this is strange because the beginning of the pasuk is plural. Vayalu says all the spies got to the Negev, and then it says and he came to Hevron. Vayavo. So the Gemara asks, Vayavo mivayel. It should say in plural. Amar Rava melamed shepiresh Kalev ma'atzat meragelim ve'alach v'neshtateh al kivrei avot. That Kalev, he separated himself from the pack of spies and he went to pray by the graves of the avot in the city of Hevron. Amar lein avotai, he went to the graves and he said, my dear fathers, bekshu alai rachamim she'inatzel ma'atzat meragelim. Please save me that I should be saved. Pray for me that I should be saved from the plot of the spies. Yoshua kevar bikesh Moshe alav rachamim. We know already Yoshua was covered. Moshe Rabbeinu prayed for him. She'ne'emar vayikra Moshe l'Hoshia ben Nun Yoshua. What does the yud of Yoshua stand for? Ya Yoshiacha me'atzat menegirim. Right, that God should save you from the idea of the spies. Ve'ayru dichtiv, like the pasuk says, ve'avdi Kalev ekev aita ruach acheret imo. It says that Kalev had a different spirit in him, which means he had a different idea. He was different than all the other spies. Ruach acheret, he had a different direction than all the spies. And if you look at the end of that pasuk over there, it tells us that as a result, God gave him the land of Hebron. The pasuk says, "Vaymale acharai v'aviotim al hazeh asher b'shama v'zaro yurishena." We know that he inherited a piece of land. What land did he inherit? Kalev, Hebron. What does that teach us? Why did he get Hebron? Since he went to Hebron to pray, so therefore in his inheritance he got the land of Hebron. That is two things that we need to analyze on this last piece of the Gemara. Number one, throughout the story of the Meragelim, it's always referred to as Atzat Meragelim. Atzat Meragelim is literally an Atzah is an advice. Now, why is it called Atzat Meragelim, the advice of the Meragelim? It really wasn't an advice. They spoke Lashon Hara, they spoke bad things about it. It should say Dibat Meragelim. It doesn't mean Atzat. And even Moshe Rabbeinu, when he sprang for his student, Ya Yoshiacha Me'atzat Meragelim, from the advice of the Meragelim. So the Mefarshim explained over here that really when they came back, what they reported, they saw. They weren't lying about anything over here. They did see the big fruits as evident as they brought it back. They did see funerals that took place every single day that they were there. They did see giants like we're going to see in the Gemara immediately. So there was really no lie in exactly what they said. They did see the cities that they were living in. The issue of the Meragelim was not the report. More so then what they did after they gave the report. After they gave the report, they filed an opinion. And they came along and said, it's our opinion not to go in. That's where you made the mistake. Moshe Rabbeinu said, we didn't send you on this expedition to give an opinion. Which means you were supposed to just come back and report your findings. If they just would have stopped at the last piece of information, you're okay. But then they came along and they added, and as a result of this, we think, oh, you're giving now advice? Who asked you for your advice? That was the avon of the Meragelim. You gave us, we don't need your advice. The advice is God's advice that we're going to go in. So therefore, yeah, Yoshiacha ma'atzat Meragelim. That was the claim against the spies, the Aitzah that they offer. That's what it's always calling the Aitzah. Not the word. The words themselves had some validity. Furthermore, the Mefarshim say over here on this Pasuk, Ekev, it says by Kalev, right? It says by him that he had Ruach Acheret. Ekev Kalev, Avdi Kalev, Ekev Aita Ruach Acheret Emo. The Arizal says that there was a great man called Hur. Mm-hmm. Hur was partners with Aharon at Kohen when Moshe Rabbeinu went up to the Shamayim to get the Torah. And Jewish people worshipped the Egel. As a result, when they came to Hur to tell them that they want to worship the Egel, Hur was adamant. Impossible, nothing doing, we can't do it, it's wrong, it's Asur. Where Aharon was what we call Ahad Bapeh Vahad Balev, which means He told them, okay, go get the gold, go get the, you know, the jewelry and stuff like that, verbally said, but in his heart, of course, he had no intention at all whatsoever to do that. It was a stalling tactic. It was a tactic very similar to the tactic of Caliph. When Caliph came back and, you know, the spies were giving the report, so Caliph, if you remember, he got up and said, you know, you think that's the only thing Ben Amram did for us? He started to talk a little negative about what should have been, so the spies said, oh, he's going to be our spokesman. He's going to be Chavot, Caliph, you know, give it out. And then he came along and said, you know, he took us out of Egypt, he gave us the Torah, he started speaking praises. So he used like a hat bepeh v'hat belev, he used it for the good things. So the Mefarshim say that since Chul was a great Sadiq, as a result of him not using that ruse, so he ended up getting killed because of it. And there was a big big claim against the Jewish people that they can kill this great Sadiq, Hur. So the holy books bring down that even though Hur did right, he was unyielding and he was uncompromising and he was supposed to do what he did, but what? He could have used that method of Aharon of Ahat Bepev Habad of Dikdusha. He could have used it L'Shem Shamayim. So it says he had to come back. And who did he come back as? He came back as Caliph in order to this time, without having the people having to kill him, to use this this that's what the pasuk says, va'avdi kalev ekev, because ruach acheret, boy, he had a different spirit. Haita ruach acheret imo. Who is the different spirit? Hur. So that Arizal says ruach is otiyot hur. What was the other spirit? The ruach was actually ruach and hur are the same letters. Mm-hmm. So ruach acher, who was the ruach? Hur, and he was the other spirit that he had in him. So you see, there was much more. No, he died. He died earlier before.
2 years.
He died by the eagle. So what? No, according to that, Arizal, the neshamot are able to be mi'ubar in a person even when he's alive. The neshamot of the tzaddikim are able to enter the person as it happens. It's called the ibud neshama. That's not a problem. Comes the Gemara and says, "Visham achiman shishai v'talmai." So it says in the pasuk over here that what, that they were the giants. The giants were over there in Eretz Kenaan. So it says Ahiman. Now we're going to go to the names of the giants. Why was he called Ahiman? Miyuman shebe'ehav. Miyuman is like the strongest. He was the strongest of the brothers. Sheshai shemesim et ha'aretz kishachatot. That when he walks, his step, his stride was so heavy that he would make like imprints in the ground. He would make like holes in the ground. He would destroy the ground when he was walking. That she says that shemakom leglav ma'amik ba'aris mirov kovdo. His leg was so heavy, it would make like holes in the ground. V'nikar shem keguma, right? Like a pothole in the ground as he was walking, right? And some say that the word sheshai is milashon amude shesh, like a pillar of marble. When you put a pillar of marble in the ground, you take it out, obviously there's a hole over there. So his legs were like sheshai, like amude shesh, that he was walking, made tremendous imprints. In any event, talmai shemesim et ha'aretz telamim telamim. Talmai means like a furrow. When he would walk, his legs were so strong, it would kick up the dirt of the ground, and was like he plowed the ground like a telamim, he would make furrows in the ground. Davar acher, another interpretation. Now this another interpretation is not being doresh their names. The first tenashah was their names. Right? Now it's going to be doresh that they were known. These were famous men. Ahiman bana Anat. He was famous for building the city of Anat. Sheshai bana Alush. He built the city of Alush. Talmai bana Talbush. Okay, those are different cities that they built. Yelide Anak. Now these were the children of the giants. Shema'anikin hama bekomatan. So the reason called Yelidei Anak, the way he explains over here is, they wore the sun as a necklace. They were so big that when they would walk, it would look like the sun was hanging over their neck like a necklace. So they call them Yelidei Anak, Shema'anikim et ha'chama bekomatan. That's how taught what Rashi says, Merov gova komatan domin ki'ilu savaram nokev ve'onek benekev sha'chama yotzed bo. Right, it looks like they're going through the sun itself. Now, one more derasha on this. It says veHevron. Now we're going to say a derasha on the city of Hevron. VeHevron sheva shanim nivneta. Hevron was built literally It says it was built 7 years before So'an Misraim. There were two cities. One is Hebron in Israel, and one is So'an in Misraim. So literally the Pasuk says Hebron was built 7 years before So'an Misraim. Now let's go slow. Okay. The city of Hebron was in the land of Canaan. The city of So'an was the land of Misraim. Mm-hmm. Now, although you know Canaan and Misraim as lands, but Canaan and Misraim were actually people. They were actually the children of Ham. Ham, the son of Noah, had children. Okay? So, one of the children he had was Misraim, who was actually older than Canaan. So the Gemara is going to say, it doesn't make sense that Ham would build Hebron, Canaan, for his younger son before he would build a city for his older son, Misraim. So therefore we cannot interpret it that Hebron was 7 years earlier built than So'an and Misraim. It doesn't make sense that a father is going to build for his younger son before he builds for his older son. So the Gemara says, it was actually built before. If Shar Adam Bone Bait of No Katan Kodim Lamno Gadol, a person is going to build a city for his younger son before his older son. Why? Dichtiv, Ubne Ham. Who was the sons of Ham? Kush, Misraim, Fut, Ukna'am. So Canaan was the youngest one. So he's not going to build Hebron, which is in Canaan, before he built something for his son Misraim. Ela Shaita Mevone Alahat Meshiv'a Bitzuan. Ela, it means like this. Hebron was seven times more fertile than Misraim. Nivneta doesn't mean built. It means it was more flourishing than So'an Misraim. Seven times better. Now that's a big chiddush. Why? So Gemara says, Ve'en lechat terashim mikol eretz Yisrael yoter mehebron. He says, you have to know, the rockiest area in the whole land of Israel is Hebron. It's really the worst land of Israel. Is rocky. Right? The Gemara, dekavre b'shikveh. That's why, what do they use Hebron for? For burying dead. Mm-hmm. You really can't plant too much in Hebron. It's used like as a cemetery. The most fertile of all the lands is what? Misraim. Like the garden of Hashem, like the land of Misraim. And in Misraim, the most fertile of Misraim is what? So'an. Dichtiv. So'an Sarav. Who used to live in So'an? All the kings and all the princes. That was like considered the most hashuv metropolis over there. So'an. Va'afidu ha'ache, Hebron mevune achat mishiv'a b'tso'an. And still, Hebron, which is the rockiest part, all that, is still greater than the greatest of Misraim. That's how, to show you the praise of Eretz Yisrael. The worst of Eretz Yisrael is seven times greater than the best of Misraim. So the Gemara says, V'Hebron terashim aveh. Wait a minute, is Hebron rocky? You tell me Hebron is a rocky terrain. But the Pasuk says, this is after Avshalom wanted to bring a Korban to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Avshalom went to his father David and he said, please, I want to bring a sacrifice in the Mishkan. Let me go to Hebron to bring a sacrifice. Now the problem is, what is he going in Hebron? The Mishkan was not in Hebron, the Mishkan was in Giv'on. So what is he saying? I want to go to Hebron to bring a sacrifice. So comes the Gemara says, "Va'amar Avia Beitim Arava Bar Bar Hanan Shalak Rabbi Kivasim MeHebron." He went to bring the animals, the sheep. He went to bring from Hebron. Vetanya, and we have a brayter that says, "Elim Moav." The best goats come from, best rams come from Moav, Kivasim MeHebron, and the best goat, the best sheep come from Hebron. So you see what? If you have sheep over there, means you have grazing. That means over there you have planting. So actually, you tell me it's a rocky area, you won't be able to graze animals over there if it was a rocky area. So therefore, it's challenging. Yeah, we just said that while it's a rocky area, there's no grazing. But here it says, when Avshalom went to get his animal that he brought, he went to, specifically to Hebron. Like the Gemara says, Hebron has the best animals. So the Gemara says, Adraba, Mina. From that story, I'll bring you a proof that I'm right. That Adraba, that it was a fertile land. How do you know? Aidi de klisha ar'a avda ra'ya. Because the land, the dust of the rocky land is very, very, it's light dust. So you're not able to really plant food for human beings like wheat, like barley. So what do they plant over there? Grass and things like that that animals are able to eat. So they're on the contrary. It's fertile, But since it's rocky, they don't plant human food. Mm-hmm. They plant animal fodder over there. And therefore, what happens? The animals of Hebron, it says, Vishamin Kenyana. And therefore, the acquisition of Hebron is very fat because the animals are very fat. So, Adrab, from what you bring me a proof, that's not proving me, by the way. It's to show me that since there was a lot of animals over there, it shows me what? Because it was rocky, they only planted the animal food, which is easier to plant over there, I guess. That's why the animals of Hebron were much stronger. Let's just look at one Rashi over here. Elchana v'ashalem, and the Rashi is talking about Avshalom. Elchana b'Hebron, I'm going to go to Hebron v'ashalem aneder shiladarti b'geshur. It says Avshalom made a neder to bring a korban. K'dechti bateki nadav v'neder avdecha b'shifti b'geshur. B'Hebron, my ba'e, v'lo yashem ha-mizbaki b'geshur. What do you say? I'm going to bring my korban in Hebron. The Mishkan was in Givon. But I'm going to go to Hebron to get the animal to ultimately bring it in the Mishkan, which is Givon. It seems it wasn't rocky, it was actually fertile. And you're helping me from this. You couldn't plant human food because it was rocky. However, because the dirt of the rocky land is very, very, very light dirt. Things like umuatu, mitokach, lo ayu horshim v'suim otat tivuat ma'achal adam. So what did they do instead? Ve'avda ra'ya, mitzama'atu ma'ala asabim, ve'ochlim ha'son. The sheep would eat the food, ve'shaman kenyana ha'mekne ha'son, shekach derech ha'son la'shbiach be'erish yevesha'a v'terashim. Which is the sheep, they grow better in a dry land than in a moist land. That's the inyan of Hebron. Baruch Adonai Olam, amen, amen.